For a king, huh? You just play it cool and tell them power's not a thing. What? You look them in the eye and say, I know I'm not a guy, but see, there's power in my losses and there's power in my wins. Independent woman looking shower in your bims. They call me Coco, but I'm Mike, you can't be powder in my skin. And you don't need to spend another hour in the gym. You know I'm blinded by his grace, but when you found me, I was dim. We'll be counting down the years, yeah, I'm about this. All them dirty secrets that we share, I'll clear the browsers. We the type to build on our careers and share the houses. You can be a woman and a boss and wear the trousers at the same time. That I ain't never letting go. But as long as I'm alive, then I'll be sponsoring your pride. You know there's power in the couple, let me compliment your vibe, girl.
Going out to the Sex Biscuit. The Sex Biscuit, who's on air live at 9:20 this morning, Mr. Roberto Garman. Hello, Totnes. Hello, Dartington. How are you doing? You all right? Have you got your banana smoothie? That was Power. Stormzy. Little Miss Stormzy. It's a hell of a teenage song, isn't it? Just linking in with Peter Shearn's fabulous breakfast show, all about teenage years. And Peter Shearn admitted that he was a spotty, what did he say? He was bad-tempered, belligerent, dotty, spotty and lotty teenager. I don't believe you, Peter Shearn. I bet you were gorgeous. I bet you were adorable. Anyway, hello, Totnes. This is Julie Mullen. And the K-Girls show, the door is flung open. And there's loads of pizza cake. I've had pizza cake. It's amazing. Oh, my God. Pizza cake is... I'll tell you more about that. I'll get Colin Large on the show to talk about his pizza cake. Meantime, yes, Dartington. Hello, Dartington. And Totnes, the ones that can just gently switch on their 102.5 FM Radio. Thank you for doing that. And if you're further afield in Hungary or Seychelles, or perhaps you're in Budapest, or maybe closer to Devon in the UK, in Staffordshire, or Hoylake, or you're on Crosby Beach. Wow. I don't know what that was, but that sounded good. Something went... So, hello, and let's get this show rocking. We have got Judy Lee, Fantasimondo. I think she's on her seventh novel. That's at 9:45 today. She's coming on for 6 weeks. We've already done one. We're on number two session, and she is going to be reading for one of her published books. But she's already told me that she's two books ahead, basically. And I was just chatting with Martin the other night saying, how does Judy Lee do it? But we'll find out more, won't we? Let's have a bit of a teenage years. Let's have a bit of Barbie.
Hiya, Bobby.
Hi, Barbie. Hi, Ken.
All right.
Sure, Ken.
Jump in.
I'm a Barbie girl in the Barbie world. Life in plastic. It's fantastic. You can brush my hair.
Come on, Barbie, let's go party.
I'm a Barbie girl in the Barbie world. Life in plastic, it's fantastic. You can brush my hair, undress me everywhere. Imagination, life is your creation. I'm a blonde bimbo girl in the fantasy world. Dress me up, make it tight, I'm your dolly.
You're my doll, rock and roll. Feel the glamour in pink. Kiss me here, touch me there.
Come on, Barbie, let's go and party. That's going out especially to Chris White, really, because it's all his fault that that song has ever been played on this show. We did a programme about plastics. He put an amazing film together, actually, really incredible, with some Arts Council funding. Now, you may or may not have heard of Mr. Robert Garnham, but you will certainly be aware of him at 9:20 this morning. He's an incredibly funny poet. In fact, I met him at St. Mary's in Totnes ages ago when we first moved. I went up to him and I said, I love your poetry. You had us absolutely on the floor laughing, and that's no joke. And so he gave me his contact details, and I've stalked him ever since. Oh, I bet you another... No, it hasn't. So he is, as I explained, the sex biscuit. He is a professor of whimsy and biscuits. But for this show, he's been designated as sex biscuit. I've no idea why. And we've got some pizza cake, and we'll be getting Colin Large to explain what on earth pizza cake is. And shall we have a little bit of peaches? Do you like peaches?
Thank you. now that you got some suntan lotion in that bottle of yours. Spread it all over my peeling skin, baby. That feels real good. All the skirt, lapping up the sun. Lap me up. Why don't you come on and lap me up? Looking at the beaches. Well, there goes another one just lying down on the sand dunes. I better go take a swim and see if I can cool down a little bit. 'Cause you and me, woman, we got a lot of things on our minds. You know what I mean? Walking on the beaches, looking at the beaches. I can think of a lot worse places to be. Like down in the street, or down in the sewer, or even on the end of a skewer.
Stranglers and Peaches on the Beaches. Perfect poetry song, isn't it? For Mr. Robert Garnham at 9:20. I hope he's got his glasses on. So tell me, does GoFundMe work? Absolutely no idea. But this morning I put on my page a GoFundMe for Gussie. She's called Augusta Knopoff, who's trying to study at the Glasgow Conservatoire. And she actually has managed to get Bill Nighy to come on her a GoFundMe page and give her a personal recommendation. As he said, I don't actually ever do this, but she's such a talent and I've known her since she was a baby. So I thought that was absolutely brilliant. And people have been incredibly generous thus far. I think it's only just gone up. Someone's given £1,000, another person £500. So it's interesting about the GoFundMe scenario. I've absolutely no idea really about it, other than obviously I've seen along the time that it's existed, certain people getting involved and putting it out there. So all the best of luck to Augusta Knopoff for her success and for trying to raise £17,000. Certainly, she has got an extraordinary, extraordinary talent. Talking of talent, yes, at 9:20 this morning, we have the Professor of Whimsy, funny poet, Mr. Robert Garnham from Paignton. Oh, my God. He's had to travel that far on Messenger. I love Messenger because I don't have to think of anyone's phone number. It's great. I used to have to dial numbers. That was always a bit scary because I'm a bit prone to getting the wrong one. Shall we have a little bit of the Chemical Brothers? Don't know. It sounds weird. I like it. Come on, get your nightie off. Let's dance. Thank you.
not one ever done.
Do it again.
All I wanted was a little fun.
Do it again.
Got a brain like bubblegum.
Do it again.
Blowing up my cranium.
Do it again.
Oh my god, what have I done?
Do it again.
All I wanted was a little fun.
Do it again.
Got a brain like bubblegum.
Do it again.
Blowing up my cranium.
Do it again.
All I wanted was a little fun. I blame Peter Schoen for all these music choices. That was Do It Again and the Chemical Brothers. Oh my god. I got a brain like bubblegum. Yeah, that's what I like to know. Have you got a brain like bubblegum? We're gonna get Mr. Robert Garnham on the blower, on the messenger blower, very, very soon. He's just getting into his clothes. Oh, Robert, hurry up. Get your trousers on, dear. Your tuxedo. Have you got your feather boa on? He's expecting me to be on time, so I better be good about that. That was one of those, like, trance songs where you hear it and you think, oh, LSD flashback. Actually, strangely, I really liked that. Don't know why. Just born that way. Okay, it's time. We've got to get the sex biscuit on. Hang on, let's do it. It's ringing.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, is this the Professor of Whimsy?
It certainly is, yes.
Hello, hello, Mr. Garland.
You're through to the Professor of Whimsy. How may I help you?
So what's it like in Paignton? Is it raining? Because it's really beautifully sunny in Totnes.
Yeah, it's raining. We just had a whirlwind come through. It's hail, there's sleet. It's a bit of everything, really.
I thought as much. Paignton really has its own little weather, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Are you like the king of Paignton?
I wouldn't say that. No, no. I don't know what you... More like the Mafia Don of poetry, Paignton. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure. Now, Robert, first of all, in order is a congratulations because of the Saboteur. Is that how you say it? Saboteur Awards? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, it was. I know. It was a bit of a surprise because I wasn't expecting it at all. And I had my phone turned off that day and I just turned it on just early evening and it came through all these messages saying, oh, you're shortlisted. And I thought, wow.
Isn't that brilliant? So, is that the first time you've been shortlisted for it?
Yes, I was longlisted a couple of times, I think about three or four times a few years back. But yeah, the first time I've been shortlisted. So yeah, I was completely blown away by that. It was like, I wasn't expecting that at all.
That's absolutely fantastic. And what do they do next? What's the process?
I think the voting starts, I think it's today, lunchtime today, and that carries on. I think it's till May the 7th. I'm not sure on the actual dates, but yeah, you now we're narrowed down to four, and the people vote on who they want to win, basically. So,
so this is a good opportunity. So I thought we'd kick off with some of your fab poetry. Is that all right?
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. I will. I have one right here for you. And
oh, yummy.
Yeah. It's called Poem. And it's got like we're in Devon. It's a very rural area, and a lot of my poetry doesn't concentrate on rural themes. So I thought I'd make amends with that. And here we go.
Fab.
"Why have you never been dry stone walling before?" he asked. "It was cold and wet and windy and foggy and miserable. And the rain was clingy and uncomfortable as it rolled down my neck." "I have no idea," I replied. "There are two steps to dry stone walling," he said. "Picking up the stone and putting it in the wall. It's that simple. Even an idiot can do it." I gave it a go and a mini avalanche ensued. "You're doing it all wrong," he pointed out. "Grab the stone like this," he said. "This is a little life hack for you." And I thought my life hack would be, "Don't go dry stone walling." But I smiled and I imagined that each rock was a cupcake and I was making a display of cupcakes in a shop that sold cupcakes. But then all I could think about was wanting to eat a cupcake. "Do you like my beard?" he asked. "I got it caught in the zip of my anorak last week, and the missus had to cut me out with her giant dressmaking scissors. By the way, what's this sudden trend I see for men wearing ankle bracelets?" I told him I didn't know. "It's good to get out in the world," he said. "It's good to commune with nature. It's good to get your hands dirty. It's good to smell the pungent aroma of defecating cows. It's good to shiver. It's good to have your fingers so cold they've gone numb and bright pink, isn't it? You can always come back to my croft when all this is done and take your shirt off. And your jeans look wet too. See how I use a piece of string to make sure we're dry stone walling in the right direction? My wife says she's out for the rest of the afternoon. It's good to be at one with the land. It's good to work with natural objects. It's good to feel the same ancient wind that blew on our ancestors. I'm getting a trampoline delivered tomorrow if you want to come round. A trampoline surrounded by rugged, horny sheep. The dry stones I'd put on the wall all suddenly came tumbling down, and we both stood there and he said, 'Yes, I know exactly what you did there. You got too greedy, my son. You came in all cocky, thinking you're Jack the Lad of the dry stone walling community, but it bites you on the bum. It's good when your nose runs and there's no choice but to let it drip. There's a small local bus I see every now and then, whose route number dances like a digital will-o'-the-wisp above the dry stone walls. I could be off and away before Neighbours comes on. But that trampoline sounds mighty tempting.'"
Hang on. I've got to give you the horn. There we are. I love it that we communicate with horns. Robert Gonham, you are hilarious and mad. And I was just saying as an introduction for you coming on the show that we first met you at St. Mary's in Totnes, the big church lots of... fantastic shows. In fact, they're going to be starting again soon. And you just completely had us in stitches. And I went and I lassoed you and you haven't been able to be free ever since. So what Martin said this morning at breakfast is Robert Garnham, he is just this perpetual... He couldn't actually say the words. He couldn't get them out in order because he said... How does he do it? And I said, I'm going to ask him. Because you are this absolute bomb in poetry. You just explode into nuance and vivacity. And every time a coconut, you're actually either working on a show, you're on television, you're in an advert for Nationwide. You, you're this, that, and the other. You're at loads of gigs. Where the heck do you get all your energy, and how do you get your inspiration?
To be honest, I have absolutely no idea. I don't know. I just do. I think the big rule is just to do what pleases you, you know. So I don't sit down and think I will do a poem that will be XXX and will have this effect. I just sit down and write and just go wherever the muse takes me, I suppose. Yeah. That's it. And then just play around, really, and have fun, have lots of fun.
It's quite surrealist, that poem that you just did to kick off. It's quite eccentric, surrealist. But, you know, it's got such a strong rhythm to it. And that rhythm, I think, is a fantastic sort of vortex that drags you into the poem, which is brilliant. Now, I know you've been working on a new show, of course, because you are Robert Garnham. So tell me about what happened. Was it last Wednesday filming in?
Yes.
Tell me everything.
Well, basically, I've got a new book coming out with Burning Eye next month, May the 21st.
So let's do a little ding for you. Hang on.
Today.
Okay.
Yay! And I promised I would do a show.
Robert, could you adjust your volume a bit?
I'll try. Okay. Let's see. How do I do that? I'm not very technical. Is that any better?
Yeah, that's fab. Yeah, go on.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, so I said I would come up with a show and take it around the country to promote the book. And then, of course, lockdown started and everything else. So I've been working on this show to accompany the book. It's called The Search for Happiness. Yay!
Search for Happiness.
And I've been working on it since May last year. And writing it, then rehearsing it, learning it. And then because most of the fringes have gone online now, I thought it would be great to film it. So I've got a filmmaker friend called John Tompkins, who is amazing. He's a professional filmmaker. And we got together at Palace Theatre here in Paignton, and we filmed the whole show.
Amazing.
Took 4 hours. Yep. He's editing it right now, and we will stream it over the summer. It will be on online fringes, and you'll be able to watch it online, hopefully. So that's what we've been doing. So it was really fun.
I was going to say, was it really hard work?
It was, yeah, because it was 4 hours of filming, because he wanted to do it from all different angles with a multi-camera setup. So I basically had to go for the show about 3 times.
Wow.
And then repeat bits of it as well, so that he could get a camera like behind me or something like that. And I mean, I'm not used to filming. I know you are, but it was, I just found it really tiring by the end of it.
Well, 4 hours, that's quite heavy duty, because you normally, you go into a scene and you maybe do it once or twice and then it's kind of a wrap, obviously depending on the length of the scene, but generally speaking, in television, you're just sent. It's all quite immediate, but 4 hours, kind of that's a long old time to be put on the spot and doing the show 3 times. But I would say an amazing kind of discipline to get you really used to that show and in a theatre setting as well.
Absolutely! Yeah,
that's actually fantastic.
Practice.
Should we have another poem actually?
Yeah, sure. In fact, I'll do one from the show if you like.
Yee-hoo!
It's, it goes exactly like this. Shakalaka boom boom, shakalaka boom, shakalaka boom boom, shakalaka boom. Gotta get through the day, gotta do your thing. Gotta get through the day, feel it deep within. Gotta get through the day, people make some room. Can't do the thing without shakalaka boom. Shakalaka boom boom, shakalaka boom, shakalaka boom boom, shakalaka boom. Go to bake a cake one day, go to bake a cake. Go to bake a cake one day. Hope I don't make a mistake. Add all the ingredients. Stir it with a spoon. Add some salt and a pinch of shakalaka boom. Shakalaka boom boom. Shakalaka boom. Shakalaka boom boom. Shakalaka boom. Made my Broadway debut on a big Shakespeare play. I knew all the words by heart. I knew just what to say. To be or not to be, I said. And with a sense of doom, forgot what came just after that. Said shakalaka boom, shakalaka boom boom, shakalaka boom, shakalaka boom boom, shakalaka boom. Go out on a hot date, small talk and a chat. Go out on a hot date and then back to his flat. Making lots of small talk, hope I don't peek too soon. All he did was stroke my arm and shakalaka boom. Shakalaka boom boom, shakalaka boom, shakalaka boom boom, shakalaka boom. And then I went to the funeral. My aunt had passed away. Such a lovely funeral on such a dismal day. I went to give the eulogy. The coffin lid went zoom. My aunt, she suddenly sat right up, said shakalaka boom. Shakalaka boom boom, shakalaka boom. Shakalaka boom boom, shakalaka boom. Thank you.
Yay! Tell me, when you when you put together this show, was the driving force to kind of bring something to an audience that just has them laughing and kind of feeling happiness? Would you say that that was behind it all?
Yes. I mean, the book, I planned the book back in 2018.
Yeah.
And I thought the world is, you know, it's a really miserable place, you know, the politics, the environment, racism, and all kinds of things. And I thought, I just want to do something that cheers people up. And then of course, things suddenly got even worse.
Oh, God.
So putting the show together, I thought it would be one person's search for happiness. And it, I mean, it starts off fairly happy. And then he goes on this journey where he meets other people and talks to them. And it becomes like a voyage of discovery. So, yeah, there's moments in there that are a bit solemn and a bit sad. But, yeah, the whole overall theme of it is well-being and happiness and, and feeling good, hopefully.
Excellent. Well, you're one of those people that just light up a room, aren't you? You kind of walk in there and everybody goes, it's Robert! God, everyone wants to hug you. And obviously this is going back a year or so when we yes. could do that sort of thing. So in this crazy time, how have you, I mean, clearly from your posts on Facebook, you have been incredibly busy and you've turned into a different direction, really, in terms of obviously what everyone else is doing is finding their page online and stuff like that. Has it kind of opened your mind to other things and got you going in a different direction, would you say? Or would you say you're just using those as coping skills to keep, you know, the imprint of your poetry out there? How would you describe this last year in terms of performance for you?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same for anyone. Poets, comedians, performance poets, spoken word artists, we've all had to adapt to the fact that we don't have a live audience anymore. Some people have just stopped or gone on hiatus. Some people are, you know, they're writing and carrying on. And I just thought it's an opportunity to go online and keep an audience and hopefully find new audiences by doing online gigs and having an online presence. And I think, I think we've all had to adapt. And that's just my way of doing it. It's just to try and keep on doing the same stuff, but with a online presence more than a live audience. So I do miss actual people, you know,
of course, yeah,
immediate interaction and being with an audience. But you know, it could be worse. You know, we could just be sitting at home doing nothing. So I kind of like online gigs, but it's just not the same.
No, and Shelley Zender was saying that actually she hasn't done that many of them, but the ones she's done, she's actually gone across to San Francisco, found poetry gigs in the States and other places. So have you done that too?
Yes, I have. And also New Zealand as well. That's
wow.
Lovely. Yeah. The good thing about New Zealand gigs is that they start at 7 in the morning. You have to get up early. But then you've still got the rest of the day. So it's really weird. The gig ends and then, it's only 11 in the morning.
That is completely, completely brilliant. What were the differences in the New Zealand gig?
They're all the ones over the world, they mostly follow the same kind of pattern. Yeah, you got the same enthusiasm, the same kind of audiences. The New Zealand people really seem to get English humour.
Mm.
I think we're very similar in humour in that respect.
Mm.
And they're pretty much, it's really nice to know that although the world is a big place, you know, we're all united by more or less the same things, which is words, poetry and humour. So, it's a real good learning experience.
I bet. Now, tell me about your relationship with biscuits.
Biscuits. I think the biscuits have always been there for me and I've always been there for biscuits. So
on that note, can we have another poem, please?
Yeah, sure. I tell you what, I do... This one, this is, I live in the town of Paignton, not far from Totnes, and I come from Surrey originally, I come from Staines, and it's still unique living at the seaside. So this is a poem all about Paignton.
Excellent.
This town is not torrid, nor tainted, nor brazen. This tornado of flavours, chip shops and chopsticks and packets of quavers, savour its layers and nautical sailors, harbours and barbers and car parks and Mars bars, a beer at the pier inn while peering at the pier thing, a stride and a stroll, but hide from the gulls your hot sausage roll. It's the way that we roll with our seaside soul. High tide, drip dry, knick-knack, paddywhack, picnic and a pack-a-mack, promenade, flapjack, sand in your rucksack, sand in your flapjack, sand in your bum crack, let's go to the pub. Cinema, chick flicks, candy floss, pick and mix, fish and chips, kiss me quick, think I feel sick. Ring road, surf shack, seaweed, stink, caravan, holidays, worse than you think. Dodgy, dodgy plumbing and a blocked up sink. Big bands and jazz hands, gleaming sands and one night stands. You probably will not understand. This ain't no hole, it's got seaside soul. Amusements, bemusements, soup of the day. The all-day breakfast only served until midday. Have you paid and displayed? Grab your bucket and spade. Memories fade, but your heart will always stay. This frisky town, this sea breezy town, this cream tea scene of green seas and freezing dips, donkey rides and cheesy chips, ice cream by the bowl, it's got seaside soul. Dancing like lovers on the prom in the rain, the hot pulse of life adding fire to my brain, the legs of the pier stand deep in the brine, let's dance one more time, say you'll be mine. We grin and we laugh and we howl at the ships. The night is a fire and it smells just like chips. You bend for a kiss like a child with a doll. I ask what's for dinner. You said seaside soul.
Woo! Perfect timing. We've run out of time. Robert Gonham, you have been amazing as per usual. Now tell everyone how to vote for you so they go on to... Saboteur, yeah.
Let me think. I think it's called the Saboteur Awards.
Yep.
And it will be online from about midday, I think.
Today, yeah.
Yes, I really have to look it up and figure it all out.
So if you've loved what you've heard, everyone out there, go online and please, please, please vote for Mr. Robert Garnham. And on that note, thank you so much for being on our show, Robert. As usual, we loved every single minute of it. All the very best with your show, and we'll be in contact, I'm sure, along the way.
Thanks, Julie. Have a lovely day. Thank you.
And you too. Take care now. Woo!
Bye.
Bye. Mr. Robert Garnham. Woo! Woo! Wow. Let's see. What's next? We've got to have something Salty, I think. Or did we have that? No idea. We probably did. You recovered from Mr. Robert Garnham. Absolutely sensationally. So we're moving on swiftly to novelist Judy Lee. And as I mentioned earlier, I think she's on her seventh book in terms of publishing seven books. And she's already written two more that are waiting in the aisle to be put out there. So she is one of those go-go-go fabulous writers that we're going to spend 6 weeks with. So we've already done week one, and we're going to be moving on in a moment to talk with Judy Lee, who's in Wellington in Somerset. So we're going from Paignton to Wellington. So we keep it in a kind of lovely country setting. So that was Salty Dog and Come Along. I thought it was quite nice. After Mr. Robert Garnham. So don't forget to send your votes out for him. Let's get Judy Lee on the line and connect with Wellington.
Hello.
Hello, Judy Lee. Welcome to 102.5 FM Sound Art Radio in Devon, in Totnes. How are you? How on earth are you?
Oh, great. Look at the weather. Isn't it fabulous?
Yeah, so you're sharing. Wellington has got the sun, the stars, the moon and sea, has it? No. You're not
It's not sea if you go far enough, yes.
Excellent. So how's your week been? Because I was just saying to the listeners that we're going to be having you for 6 weeks, and we'll get to the nitty-gritty and the rhyme and reason of your brain, how on earth you produce so quickly and so fantastically. So tell us what you've done in this last week since we last talked to you on Wednesday.
I think the reason that I produce so much is I have so much fun doing it. I'm really lucky to enjoy what I do. I've got the editing for my next book, the working title of which is Lil's Bus Trip.
Okay.
And that's it's what it says on the tin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a story about a lady called Lil who goes on her bus trip to Northern Europe and gets into all sorts of scrapes. And in between editing that, I've just started a new one, which I can tell you more about hopefully by the end of the 6 weeks, but I've just been given a contract for 3 new books in a different style as well.
Fantastic. So hang on, let me get the dipper. Hang on. That's your congratulations. Isn't that absolutely brilliant?
Oh, bless you, thank you.
So you actually...
It's great because there's nothing like a challenge.
And you swapped publishers, didn't you? You started off with one house and you've moved to another. Would you say that that was the best thing you've done?
Probably not the best thing I've done, because I've done so many other things that I'm really pleased have gone my way. I mean, having the agent I've got is probably one of the best things I've done. But within the new publisher that I have, it's absolutely perfect. Yeah. The last group of people were lovely, but this is quite new. It's quite lively. Obviously, they're prepared to run with, you know, things like new ideas of books that I might write. And every single person, which includes all the authors, is so supportive and so positive that it's just like a dream come true. And in that sense, Julie, yeah, it is a really good move to have made.
Fantastic. And it's so good that your agent obviously has come to grips with who you are, what you're capable of, and is what feels like sending you on your creative journey in a much more strengthened, meaningful manner. Because oftentimes people want to keep you in the same old genre, and that's probably okay if you fancy doing that. But I would imagine that someone like yourself, who you know you want to go in different directions, it's great that your agent is so absolutely behind you on this.
She's a very bright lady and very hardworking, and I love her to pieces because she's just got the best sense of humour in the world. And I just love the way, you know, she has this kind of dry, bright, clever sense of humour that's really, it really makes things move forward. But she's also scrupulous, you know, she's got her eye on the ball, and she knows what's best for me and for everybody else that she looks after. And as for doing slightly different things, I think if you churn out the same thing over and over again, then, it's like the wheels going round and round, isn't it, in the sand?
Yeah.
And so what I try and write anyway, the books I have a contract for in the genre that I write, I tend to try and make them as different as possible as I go.
Yeah.
And I think my agent recognises that. And, you know, when I said I wanted to do something in a slightly different genre as well, she spoke to the editor, and the editor was all for it. And we're all, as the old saying goes, singing from the same sheet. And it's just great. I'm in a really lucky position, which I'm really grateful for.
It's brilliant, Judy. Now, you're going to read from one of your books today, is that right?
Yeah, last week I read the bit of the new one that came out, Chasing the Sun. If we go to the one before that, Heading Over the Hill,
brilliant,
which is the one about Billy and Dawny in their 70s who are looking for their forever home in Devon. And they move into a neighbourhood which doesn't accept them straight away, partly because Dawny likes her outrageous clothes and Billy's not allowed Davidson. And so the bit that I'm going to read, if I may, is about the neighbours looking through the window at them about a week after they've arrived and how the neighbours perceive them. Of course, by the end of the book, everybody becomes, you know, nice and happy, and it doesn't all go well, but this is an example of where the neighbours don't really like them near the beginning of the book. So, Malcolm's hands twitched at the curtains in the lounge. Gillian was bustling behind him, adjusting the photograph on the mantelpiece, James in his uniform, his face serious. She sighed and moved across the room, laying the table. Malcolm knew it must be 10 to 2. They always ate at 2 on the dot. On Sundays, it was always roast beef or lamb, occasionally pork or chicken, potatoes, vegetables and gravy. Malcolm narrowed his eyes. He was watching two women talk to each other out on the street, a tall blonde one and a shorter one with dark curls and gold-rimmed spectacles. They were both in their 50s in jeans and matching sweatshirts. Malcolm frowned. I wonder what they're doing. Gillian's voice chimed from behind him, accompanied by a dull clunk that told him she'd polished his knife and fork and was putting it by his polished dinner plate. Oh, dear. Those two mad old women from number 15, you know, the feminists, the ones who wear jeans all the time. Audrey and Sylvia, what does it look like they're doing, dear? They're knocking on his door. Whose door? The Hell's Angels' door. Him with the big bike and the skinny woman, the blonde one and the dark one, his two wives. Gillian sighed. Are you sure, Malcolm? They have a cake. Audrey's holding it and they're knocking at number 13. I don't think he's in, though. I saw them go out on the motorbike earlier today, just after lunch. He hasn't moved yesterday in the letter that he should move it at once. What's it like, Malcolm? The transit van? No, the cake. I don't know, Gillian. It's in a cake tin, but I expect it. A nice victorious sponge. Malcolm's voice became louder, irritated. For all I know, Gillian, it's one of those cakes the hippies make, you know, full of drugs, full of cannabis. Can of what, Malcolm? Biss. Can of biss? Gillian caught her breath. Oh, cannabis. They made the cake full of cannabis. They're turning away. The feminists are going to take the cake back to their house. Oh, no, look, they're here now, on the bike. The feminists? No, Gillian, you're being silly. The Hell's Angel and wife number two. They've just arrived. He stopped the bike. They're getting off it, and they're talking to Audrey and Sylvia. Now, Audrey's given the dark-haired wife the cake tin, and she's laughing. She's just kissed her on the cheek. Who has? Now the man from across the road has toddled across and joined them, and they're all laughing. You know, Vincent Stocker from number 14, that lad who lives with his old mother, Dilly. I'm just fetching the potatoes, Malcolm. I'm just going to get them out of the oven or they'll burn. Then I'll bring the veg and the gravy. It's almost 2 o'clock.
Yay!
So that's the neighbours.
You painted a really good picture there. I definitely stepped into that.
They do change.
Well done. So just to sort of maybe anyone out there listening who is dreaming of the day that they, like you, produce a novel, what sort of advice in terms of writing? Are you like Agatha Christie and sit down and plot out everything? Are you a spontaneous writer that just goes to your computer and writes the next scene? Or is it a mixture of both?
It's probably more the second, but a mixture of both. I think the best advice to anyone is that if you want to write a novel, then you can. So go and do it. And that involves you deciding to do it in the same way that if you were going to do a marathon, you'd get up every morning and put your gym shoes on and go for a long run and train. And it's the same thing. I think everybody has a novel in them. We all say that, and I'm sure that's true. I'm sure a lot of people have more than one novel in them, and there are some tremendously talented people. And all they lack is either the time, which is the big deal, or the opportunity to sit down and write it. From my point of view, writing is something that I do like other people might, you know, have their breakfast or whatever. So I think if it becomes part of your daily routine and you stick with it, a level of resilience is required, because I think sometimes you've got to plow away a bit. You know, there are people, J.K. Rowling's an example, isn't she, who tried for years and years and years to get her book noticed, and then suddenly it went off. So you've got to believe in yourself. When I did a thing with Matt Haig a while ago, which was lovely, and he gave me a piece of advice which I'm happy to share, because it was so good. He said that he didn't plot everything out, because if he did, the novel wouldn't surprise him. And he said, if the novel surprises him, then it will surprise his readers. So he doesn't have everything picture plotted out. He's got an idea of where he's going. And I usually have an idea of where the end is, where I'm going to be by the end. But the journey is a bit that I let kind of take me by surprise. And I think for me, that works really well. There are people who want to plan every single thing, and I understand why they would.
Yeah, I love that piece of advice, Judy. That's absolutely great. To anyone who's out there listening to Judy, reading from her book, you know, I have been with you a little bit along the journey, just because I met you at the Mansion House. But you have, you know, as you say, this kind of love of words. It's like eating breakfast. That has to be your complete quote of the day. For me, it's like eating breakfast. But what happens, I know we're running out of time, but just on the last note, do you get to places sometimes where it's very emotional, not so much the content, but the journey? Do you find yourself up against a brick wall ever and thinking, do you know what, I'm completely stuck with this? And if you have that experience, how do you get over it?
I haven't had that experience to a great extent. I think the nearest I've come to it is when you're given an edit, and I'm really lucky with my edits because they're quite light, but you have to be quite a fluid person when you come to editing. And if somebody says to you, can you make this character a little deeper, can you find a way of, you know, making this character you know, come to life more in the scene, then you have to do, you know, the Stephen King, it's been attributed to all sorts of people, but the idea of killing your darlings, you know, you can't say, I want to keep that phrase, I must have it. You'd have to just be ready to say, okay, yeah, I can do this, I can step back, I can be pragmatic. And what we want at the end of the day, I think all of us, whether we're a writer or a reader or an editor or whatever, is to produce the very best book we can. And, you know, we'll never probably be able to produce anything that's faultless, because you could always go back and edit it for another 2.5 years or something.
Sure.
But we want to produce the very best thing that we can. So if somebody says to us, you know, can you make this character a little fleshier in this particular scene? Of course I'll do it. And I think that's perhaps one of the stumbling blocks that people come to. Mm. I've never got a place yet where I've thought, I don't know what to write in this particular part. But perhaps when I get into the new genre, which is, you know, slightly more research-based because it's historical, there I've said it, then, you know, that may be more difficult, but I don't know.
That's going to be an interesting conversation. We have run out of time, but it's been really brilliant listening to your words, listening to your novel.
It's always
novel,
lovely to talk
and,
to you.
And all the very best, Judy. I'll see you next week, same time.
I look forward to it.
Loads
care,
of love, Judy Lee.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye.
The fabulous Judy Lee. Oh! I love all her top tips. We need those. Let's have a little bit of a Spanish flea to go out on. Just to say thank you so much to my guest, Mr. Robert Garnham at 9:20. To the fabulous Fabimondo, Judy Lee, novelist, allowing us to peep into her journey. I love it. All the very best today to all of our listeners in the Totnes, Dartington area, and in Seychelles, Budapest, or wherever you might be. Have a really wonderful day. Ta-da!